Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to the Thistle Rugby Podcast, the only rugby podcast that cares about Scottish rugby. How are you guys doing? I am David, and to my right, there is Matt. How are you, mate?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. I've got my Rex Club cap on, and it's fitting like a glove. Feeling good, isn't it?
Yeah, it's looking great as well. And Alan, to my left, you got the cap on backwards, looking quite bad, actually.
That's just how I roll. and I look bad, to be fair. So.
It is covering up that haircut that is required.
And my lid is shocking.
Thanks again for joining us. We missed out on a pod after the Canada match, but we are back to wallow in the misery of the defeat to the USA and look forward to hopefully the resounding triumph of victory against Argentina. You're joining us on iTunes, on Acast, or wherever you get your podcasts from. You have been chatting to us, as always, loads on Twitter at Thistle Rugby Pod. Our Instagram is blowing up with memes at Thistle_Rugby_Pod. And the mailbag has gone back to receiving zero emails at thethistlerugby@gmail.com. So please get in touch.
Some sweet memes, though.
I'm quite happy with the memes that you're putting
out. Good content.
Yeah.
If you are interested in memes, get involved. And you've been leaving us some reviews on iTunes. Please do get on there. Give us a 5-star rating and a review and hit subscribe to keep up in touch with us. Now, these ones were offered a prize, a free WKD and a shout out from our very own Alan Little. So thank you very much to the winner. I think the first one was Hereford Scottish, which said 5 stars, slightly better than the other one. I'm not sure who he's talking about. It is 3 posh lads whose main insight comes from going to school with a few of the Edinburgh players. That is very fair. Their knowledge and understanding is not that much better than a reasonably informed fan, but where else can you hear people talk about Scottish rugby without being patronised, insulted, or having to put up with the worst jingles or sound quality you could possibly imagine?
So essentially what he's saying is, you're not very good, but you're all we've got.
Exactly.
where can said fan redeem his blue WKD?
It's kind of like late in the month. I'm quite poor, so it might be a tropical VS, I think.
The tropical VS. Well, we'll certainly get that to you at some stage. Maybe during the November test, we can arrange that.
Email us your address, and I'll do a delivery from Iceland of tropical VSs to your address.
How can you say no? Thanks a lot, guys. Please do keep those reviews and ratings coming in. And as I say, hit subscribe and you will get us in your feed whenever we record. Usually once a week, but sometimes not. Because we've had a couple of weeks off, there is a huge amount of news to get through. So we're going to skip over that. We're then going to look back at the USA game with a little bit of Canada. And then, as I say, look forward to the Argentina match. Why don't we kick things off today with the news that Tennent's Lager has extended its sponsorship agreement with the SRU. A seven-figure sum is being dangled there, and they're adding title sponsorship for the Premiership and the National League starting in the coming season.
Yeah, and I think Stuart Hogg's got a few words for us on that.
Thanks, Stuart.
Hi, I'm Stuart Hogg here. It's great to see Tennent extend their partnership with Scottish Rugby from the grassroots right to the very top. So we appreciate your support, and long may it continue. Thank you.
Wow, thanks, Stuart. Has anyone else got any views on that?
Hi, Stuart McAnally here. It's great to see that Tennent have extended their partnership with Scottish Rugby all the way through from grassroots to the top level. Thanks for your support.
Wow.
Wowzers.
It's amazing
they are delighted.
It is amazing to get such candid insight from two of the pro game's biggest names.
Just straight off the top of their head. Real raters, those guys.
It's amazing that they knew that it was from the grassroots right up to the very top independently. That's incredible. Incredible stuff. Well, that is, I think, good news, more money flowing into Scottish rugby.
It's, yeah, absolutely.
Decent.
And I love the fact that they're like, what players are actually left in Scotland?
Yeah.
Ash, Harley, Hoyland. Get in the pub with a pint of Tennent and get this on social media.
They went to the main brewery. What a great day out.
That is class, yeah, to be fair.
Met the head brewer.
A great day out. Usually we would stick around and talk a wee bit more about Tennent, but there's a lot of news to get through. Yeah. So shall we skip on? Sorry, Alan. Other more rugby-related news. The Champions Cup draw for next season has been done. Glasgow have drawn Saracens, Lyon and Cardiff. Edinburgh, returning to the Championship, have drawn Montpellier, Newcastle and Toulon. Any initial thoughts on those, lads?
I mean, Glasgow's group isn't too bad, really. Obviously, Saracens is going to be a difficult one, but I don't think Saracens are as strong as maybe two seasons ago. I know they won the Premiership, but they've sort of been a bit susceptible to a few losses.
They're not as consistent
year.
As they once were.
Yeah, exactly. So, and Lyon, yeah, good team, reached semi-finals of the top 14, but still not, you wouldn't think of them as a powerhouse, and Cardiff are definitely beatable. So pretty good result, really.
Out of all those groups, that is definitely one of the better ones. Yeah. And Glasgow have to be aiming for a runners-up spot.
Definitely.
And what about Edinburgh? That is looking pretty tricky. Two massive French teams and a resurgent Newcastle.
Yeah, it's tough. But once again, it's not the worst possible outcome. I think that someone like Toulon don't travel well. And you could probably say the same about Montpellier as well. And then Newcastle, you never know. That's definitely a team that you should be aiming to beat at home and possibly away. So I think it could be a lot worse.
Vern back at Murrayfield.
Yeah, good to welcome him back. So imagine Darcy Graham defending against Julian Sevilla.
Oh, yeah. No, Doohan.
Big Doohan can take him on. That's the biggest clash in Europe.
That is huge. Clash of Titans.
We are going to talk an awful lot more about that in a little bit of a season preview next week as a sort of end of season wrap up and a look ahead. So we will get into that.
Just wetting the whistle.
Just wetting the whistle with that sort of just little bit of insight.
True Tennent style.
That we do for you. Yeah, true Tennent style. Oh, grassroots right the way up to the top. Point number three. Danny Wilson becomes the new Scotland forwards coach. Former Cardiff Blues head coach was on his way to Wasps, but we've bought him out of that contract. What do you guys think?
Yeah, well, he's done a pretty good job, a really good job at Cardiff, considering at the start of the season, there weren't great expectations. He's got them back into the Champions Cup,
yep,
and won the Challenge Cup. So by all accounts, I don't know that much about him, but he seems to be a pretty good coach. So I think it's a good appointment.
How long has he been at Cardiff Blues for?
Do you not know?
Because
he was the Wales under-20s coach as well when they had a third and a fourth or a second and a third in the under-20s World Cup. So he's got good pedigree of running like an age group side.
Yeah.
At a high level, of
successful
course.
Teams.
Yeah. And Dai Young, I think in his comments about Wasp, was like, this could not have come at a worse time for us. There's not that many good people in the market.
He was really sad.
He was like, but obviously we support Danny, but he was clearly completely gutted.
You dickhead.
So I take that as a very good sign. We'll see how that one plays out. I expect that probably ushers in the early end of Dan McFarlane's contract. He'll head off to Ulster.
Yeah.
Presumably they will have to pay the SRU out the end of his contract though.
Yes, but then SRU are going to have to pay Wasp compensation for Danny Wilson, by all accounts.
Good point, Matt. Very good. That is why you're here. Okay. On to some signings, probably the biggest of them all. after much intrigue and rumour and Edinburgh saying we are not signing any more back rows, Luke Hamilton, the back row, has joined Edinburgh on a one-year deal.
I mean, it's a bit of a funny one because he's only signed for 1 year, on a one-year deal, as you say. So maybe there's an element of he literally had no other offers, but the SOU wanted to keep him playing, so you keep him in Scotland and then maybe put him in the shop window a bit and then he can go to another club.
Feels like he's just cover for Barkley.
Yeah, that's what I think. He's just the injuries to John Barkley's happened and they needed somebody of that sort of caliber to come in.
Yeah.
Because they've also signed Fijian back row Senatiki Nialo on a 2-year deal from London Irish.
Yeah, I think it was quite interesting the way they described it. They were like, there's kind of two different types of risk. There's like player risk and then there's like financial risk. And obviously financial risk is when you spend a lot of money on a player on the hopes it will come good. Whereas player risk is when you just get someone in pretty cheap. It's a massive risk, but if it comes off, great. If not, whatever, you've lost like what, probably 40 sure. grand a year. So he was saying it's very much a player risk scenario. So I imagine they cannot be paying him that much money. So
Glasgow at the end of the 1 year deal?
Possibly. They need back rows more than him. But I think we're going to get on to a little bit more Luke Hamilton when we look back at the USA game.
Interesting, at the Edinburgh Supporters Club event, Cockrell said that they are still looking for a nine. And if the right nine comes to the market, they will go for him. And he didn't rule out the possibility of a Glasgow nine.
Ooh.
Interesting.
Very interesting.
But that might be him just chucking in. Glasgow stuff might be him just needed chucking
though.
In a few.
Needed.
Maybe Aaron Smith?
There was all the stuff about Augustine Pulu getting floated.
Yeah, I'd like Pulu. I think we just made that up between ourselves.
Probably.
It is famously being floated, though. we will keep an eye on that. A couple other signings. Robbie Nairn and Bruce Flockhart have signed one-year pro deals with Glasgow. And Glasgow legend Richie Vernon has signed for London Scottish as he is on his way to sort of transitioning out into a career in financial services, which seems like a good win for both parties.
Sounds great.
Very good. What else we got? Oh God, there's been so much going on. Edinburgh have got a new principal sponsor called Principal and Prosper.
Yeah, it really confused me for a little bit.
Yeah,
that was really good broadcasting. And we also got a bit of a sneak peek at the new kit with a little bit of burnt orange through the training kit. What do you guys make of it? Alan, I know that you've got some strong opinions
on it. Why don't you give me your view on their principal sponsor?
My view on their principal and Prosper sponsor is that it's good for them to have a sponsor away from the Scotland sponsor of BT Sport, because that BT Sport deal is with the SRU and that is continuing. So to get anything on top of that is more money in the coffers of Edinburgh and Scottish rugby. So I think that is broadly a positive.
I agree with that. I think it doesn't retrain. I don't know what I'm saying.
Small word.
It doesn't refrain from the fact that obviously BT did not care about the Edinburgh deal, and also the fact that a three office small Scotland based IFA can afford the front of shirt deal for a professional rugby team. It makes me think that brands do not value Edinburgh rugby particularly highly. Wow. Which maybe is true, and that is that's just a fact, but I just can't imagine they're spending, they can't have spent that much money on it.
Yeah. I mean, even for you, that is quite a negative take, isn't it?
You know what? Maybe we should have seen it coming. I mean, they literally have a steak restaurant on their ass. Like, that is true. But that is, like, they have a steak restaurant on their ass. So it's obviously just the value of the Edinburgh brand and that kit and the reach you get from it, it just isn't that great.
What did you guys make of the first look at the kit?
Swiftly moving on.
Thank you.
Yeah, it looked okay. It looked a bit like one of the old Scotland training kits with sort of, you substitute the orange for a bit of the kind of red trim.
Yeah.
But I think it was kind of a simple kit that I think if you look back at Edinburgh's kits, you would never, like, you rarely buy a piece thinking, I'm going to wear that to the gym or like at
what?
All. At all.
You're not wearing it.
What?
You're not wearing Edinburgh
kit.
Well,
I'd wear
gym.
This new stuff.
Wear it to work, mate.
That like camo, weird camo kit they had. It was awful. And it just looks like a pretty sort of plain standard kit that
I liked
fairly
it.
Stylish.
I thought it was decent and we will wait to see the official announcement. I did see somewhere that merchandise for Edinburgh is going to be available as of tomorrow. So I'm not sure if tomorrow is a big unveil of the home shirt. We will keep an eye on that. Number six on my news points. This is a long old list. Agenda three, the SRU's plan for overhauling the domestic game. They have published a fairly lengthy document, which doesn't say very much on it today. Matt, you had a look at lunchtime. Anything you want to add?
It didn't really say that much. I think it was quite interesting in a way, just sort of how they're reorganizing the regional structure of the leagues, and they're appointing of Scotland, sort of Scottish rugby, and they're appointing task forces to each region to sort of develop the game in those kind of places. It all sounded fairly sensible. But I don't. There was nothing in it that made me get massively worried or massively excited. It seems as if they're calling for more consultations and more discussions. So,
We will keep an eye on that, and we'll come back to you when more becomes clear. Right. Finally, on news, and it's been some bad press for the SRU. Finn Russell's dad, Keith Russell, has won an employment tribunal for unfair dismissal against the SRU, and this is set in train a series of events where questions have been raised about the nature of the senior management and the executive board of the SRU and the dictatorial nature of Mark Dodson as the chief executive. Alan, give us some thoughts on this.
Well, we were sort of chatting about it before. I think you got to split it into sort of two separate buckets. One being what is factual, which is essentially the dismissal of Keith Russell and the story of behind that and what's happened. And then second is kind of the rumour, or essentially the views of a person who's been dismissed.
Absolutely.
Of the SRU culture.
Within the facts, we also have to put the words of the judge within the tribunal, which sort of did draw some questions over the nature of the dismissal.
But should we start with the facts?
Let's start with the facts. That was a fact.
Right. Russell's dad joined in 2015.
Yeah.
That's right. A fact.
This is good.
Is this going to take long?
Dodson asked, this generally was it, Dodson asked Keith Russell to write a presentation. Dodson didn't think it was any good, mainly because of differing fonts within the presentation.
You're joking.
I'm not joking. That is literally the worst thing.
Where did you get that from?
Inside source in the SRU, mate.
Like an actual good source?
Yeah. There was differing fonts within the presentation.
Wow.
Dodson therefore had to do some work. Basically didn't think Russell was competent in his job. They had a meeting where Dodson sent him a meeting with no subject line.
Yeah, I did hear that.
And then said he wanted him to move on. And he said, I can write you a check right now.
Yeah.
And Keith Russell was like, nah, I quite like my job. So anyway, four months later, they then put in another meeting into his diary with no subject line with the HR business partner, who the day before knew Keith Russell was getting fired and was sending him like banter emails, which I think is just like, that is like cold. Like, if you're sending someone an email that actually has the word lol in it, which she did, and she knew he was getting fired.
Who's ever sent an internal work email using lol or an emoji, as some people do? What is wrong with the world?
And then they all sat, so that Keith Russell walked in, and it was Dodson, head of legal and HR business partner, and he's like, ah, shit.
Oh my God.
And Dodson opened the meeting by saying, it's not good news.
Yeah.
Oh my Lord.
And then basically he was like, you're not doing very well, but we can give you quite a lot of cash. And Russell was like, can you give me an example of what I'm not doing well? Mm. And Dodson was like, nah. Get over it.
Did you not talk about the fonts?
Yeah. There was an increasingly amount of differing fonts and misalignment of text across your presentation. And then they just shut him out of all these computers and then asked him to leave. And
within half an hour or something?
Within half an hour. And then didn't pay him his 3 months notice period.
Wow.
Which supposedly is a tactic a lot of people use to try and get people to take like a compensation package and then sign an NDA.
Yeah, yeah.
But obviously he didn't and then took it to tribunal. And that's why this has all come out.
That's why it's all come out.
Because stuff like this has supposedly happened 5 or 6 times before, but everyone's always taken the deal.
Yeah, signing the NDA.
Okay.
Interesting. Good facts.
And now it's all come out.
So those are the facts. And then Russell gave an interview to Sunday Times and the Offside Line, sort of saying, this is all what has happened, and basically calling into question the executive board of the SRU, who have since responded and have launched an inquiry into the behavior of the board and the nature of the dismissal, which will be overseen by a member of the board.
By the head of legal, is it not?
Yeah.
Is it not a non-exec that's looking, that's heading up
but
the...
But it is someone who is involved in pretty much the day-to-day of the SRU.
Correct. So.
Although I think I did see today that they have appointed a new non-exec member to the board, which maybe sort of panic to show that they're actually above board in terms of corporate governance.
I don't really know.
Yeah, I agree. And then do you see, obviously the CEO and Flockhart, who's the chairman?
I think so.
Had the interview with Tom English and BBC, which I felt came across really badly. Like, Dodson was so aggressive.
Yeah.
I didn't think he was. I think when there's an investigation still going on, a review into what's happened, you can only say so much. I think he's just covering himself legally. I didn't think it was that prickly.
Should we go through Keith Russell's accusations and then sort of have a discussion around them?
Yes,
yeah,
please.
Go on.
Accusation number one, Mark Dodson is dictatorial.
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 Dictatorial. Okay.
Which is not new news for anyone, really.
And that's not uncommon amongst leaders of large organizations.
Correct.
Fine.
Cool.
Accusation number two.
You step on people's toes, but fine.
SOU doesn't care about the club game.
I think that's a pretty blanket statement. I think that maybe Dodson and the other people who've been in the top, I can't think of other people in that same vein, but have been
Don McKay.
Yeah, exactly. Don McKay. Have been very focused on the professional game.
And the commercial side of the SRU.
Yes, exactly. And the commercial side is driven entirely by the pro teams and the national team.
Yeah.
So I don't think that's an unfair accusation.
It kind of feels that the SOU was so far behind the other unions when Dodson came in 6-7 years ago that almost you needed that sort of character to just pull this kind of professional side of Scottish rugby forward and be like, and drag them into the 21st century. And it worked for that part of the business.
Mm.
It just feels like Dodson isn't the right character to sort out the club game.
And if he is dictatorial, it'd be fair enough if he was very good at delegating. And he'd say, look, I don't know about that. I can drive the commercial side, but I'm going to hire people who are very good at developing club and youth rugby and whatever.
What? Yeah. And like Keith Russell, the head of domestic rugby. Yeah.
That's my point. He's clearly not very good at that.
Yeah.
And I think that's why you're getting a lot of the criticism that he's received.
Is there a third accusation?
No.
Okay, sorry,
I can't remember off the top of my head. Mm. There was a lot of stuff in there.
Yeah.
Essentially saying there's quite a toxic culture within the SOU. But we've always spoken to people in the SOU, and that's not something...
It's not something that's come across in conversations that we've had with people.
KPMG did a full audit and didn't. And they, for some reason, they're allowed to comment on the cultural side of things.
See, this is where...
They didn't find any problems. Yeah.
See, this is where it gets a little bit tricky. And I think you're right in separating it into like the fact of the case versus allegations versus what's been said. Because, you know, like what happened to Keith Russell sounds really bad. And he's won his false dismissal.
Yeah.
You know, that's a matter of fact. And that sounds like it was handled really, really badly.
Yeah.
He has then used that as a platform to talk about and make lots and lots of allegations, which I think there's a bit of an axe to grind with lots of people. We do it an awful lot with the SRU.
Mm.
It has allowed a lot of people to unload on their issues with the SRU.
Yeah.
Because they can just say, oh yeah, but look what Keith Russell said. I've had something similar as well. So I don't really know what where the resolution is going to come.
Do you think this would be an issue at all, or would get, because it's got a lot of coverage.
Yeah.
Would it be if it wasn't Finn Russell's dad?
Wouldn't get a quarter of the coverage.
No. I think the fact
do you think Tom English is doing an article in the BBC if a random joker gets fired?
A few people have been fired, like Colin Thompson, who I don't know anything about, but was some sort of involved with youth development or club development. And
it does give him an abnormal platform.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that immediately gives a lot more the platform and a lot more coverage and chatter.
The thing that just really throws me is during that sort of dismissal process, so the genuine sort of facts of the case, is how little thought seemed to go in to the fact that you're firing the father of your most, potentially your most important asset.
Yeah.
You're starting standoff with no replacements behind him in any real shape or form. And you're going to sack his dad.
Yeah. But the similar thing happened with England rugby when they sacked Mike Ford. And I was like, oh, what's George Ford going to make of that? I think it's pretty pathetic if you change, you're a professional and your dad should say, look, this has nothing to do with you. Mark Dodson has nothing to do with Finn Russell.
That's fine, but
do you not think it's a bit?
That's a bit of a clinical way of looking at it.
But it should be. It's how if you're a decent father, that's what you should do.
I think from an SU standpoint, in terms of like just a player management standpoint, either A, dismissing him in the correct way, or just kind of letting him get on is a much better situation for them than what's obviously happened. And then I just think they should try their hardest to keep Finn Russell happy. I know he's not a child, but it's...
Yeah, and I think in the context, if, you know, Finn Russell's dad had done something really, really bad and was, you know, being dismissed for gross negligence or something, then, you know, fair enough. But it does seem as if it's like a bit of a personality clash.
Yes, no, I think. But I think to grow the club game, it takes a lot of kind of cross-functional working, you know, decisions by committee, whatever. And that's not how Dodson works.
Yeah.
And there is part of me that thinks that Dodson's done a great job and he was the exact right person that we needed for the last 6 years, but he is not the right person to sort out the club game. And whether it's a case of replacing him with someone else or just him delegating, I don't know.
Mm.
The one other thing I want to say, I know David's trying to wrap me up.
I'm trying to wrap you up.
it just shows this constant clash that there will be between club rugby and professional rugby.
For sure.
And the point is that if the professional rugby teams don't think club rugby is fit for purpose, it begs the question, is the point of the clubs?
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
To be a development vehicle for professional rugby, because I think the clubs would say they're not.
Of course they're not.
So they're trying to sort of force a situation, but are actually potentially ruining club. The objectives of professional rugby and objectives of club rugby are going to be different.
Yeah.
And I don't think anyone knows how to manage that going forward.
Was the other accusation not that Dodson and Mackay had asked, is there a way to reduce the club count to 50?
Yeah.
That would be horrific.
Yeah, absolutely. Whereas obviously Keith Russell was wanting to increase it because he wanted sort of every small town to have a rugby.
Well, as many players as possible.
But again, in terms of the SOU being able to deliver the resources to clubs, having 50 with talent concentrated, especially at junior level, is a much better thing for them.
Of course. But anyway, let's move on.
That was a long discussion on Keith Russell. I do think it's an important issue.
That is one of our thistly issues.
I do think it is an important issue.
Yeah,
but
and there's a lot coming out of it. So
we will keep an eye on it, and I'm sure we've not heard the last of Keith Russell. Right, shall we get into the last couple of weeks? So Scotland have played against Canada, where they won, but we're going to focus much more on the result at the weekend. USA 30, Scotland 29. Tries from Blair Kinghorn. A penalty try set up by the Horn brothers. George Turner getting his fourth try on tour. And Dougie Fife getting one in the 83rd minute. Conversion from Blair Kinghorn missed, and we lost by a point. How did we get there? Alan, you watched the second half.
Yeah, I was woken up by the kids having a party next door to me.
Dear me.
Woken up by Ian Van Dahl, Castles in the Sky.
Oh, that's a banger, to be fair.
It's a great alarm clock.
And put to sleep by Roxanne. So,
not too bad.
Real shift in tone at the party.
Yeah, definitely.
I watched the second half, and I was caught up with the highlights. I obviously joined it when it was 21-13.
Yes.
Although at some point Scotland were up 21-6.
They were.
And the sort of the three key things that came out for me, which one is we've talked about basically for the last 2 years, is physicality in the pack.
Massively underpowered.
And even in the backs, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I think so.
There was that. The US 12 was making yards for fun. So was the US hooker. And a lot of those players just couldn't handle that level of like power.
Mm.
Leadership, I don't think Stuart Hogg's captain.
I don't think fullback should be captain.
I think you're completely right. I think you can't
unless you're big Gav.
Manage a team well enough from fullback.
You don't have enough touches. You don't have enough interaction to really grab a game by the scruff of the neck from fullback.
You've got to walk 30 metres to go and have a chat with everyone.
Exactly.
You can't manage a ref from fullback.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I just don't think Hogg's a captain personality.
I think he's definitely a leader, but I agree.
Agree.
Yeah.
I mean, his leadership was literally on his first run of the day, carving through the American defense and setting up the try. Just being like, I can do that.
The first half seemed really promising. What was the, at least on the scoreboard, how did it change so much?
I
was asleep.
The issue was that when the game plan started to dissolve,
there
wasn't the leadership to get it back on track. And potentially, I don't actually think Hastings and Horn had a terrible game, but they just didn't have the ability to stamp their authority on it and bring that structure back in.
I think that's right.
And the additional thing was just errors.
I think there were errors all over the place. I think we never really had parity in the pack in the first half, but I mean, I don't remember any dominant tackles. I don't remember any particularly big carries. I mean, Matt Ferguson was carrying a lot, but he wasn't, really busting that gain line and giving people a target, which I thought was an issue. And America were competing pretty hard at the breakdown. I thought Luke Hamilton didn't have a great game at seven. I didn't really notice him at the breakdown. So he wasn't slowing up the ball or stealing ball for me. And then I agree with you that Horn and Hastings weren't bad. Hastings in particular, I thought, showed some really nice touches. And Horn is just everywhere. Like, that is what he brings to the pitch. He's got a really fast pass, but he is on the shoulder of any half break. And he's collecting kicks from places that you're just like, how the hell's he got back to there? It just seems that he is all over the place. But I thought their tactical kicking, there was obviously a message came on to say we need to kick the ball a bit more. And I think that led to some decent kicks, but it also led to some pretty wayward stuff. Hastings kicked the ball away a few times. Horn's box kick, I don't think, is quite there.
Yeah.
So we were giving away lots of possession, and that allowed America to grow into the game. And they had that physicality, blunt instruments. Their hooker was incredible. Some lax defense around the fringes to keep them in the game. And it was just...
And I think on the kicking point, when we did start to kick, McGinty for the US
was better.
Completely kind of won that battle of kicking.
Yeah.
And once we sort of got into that game, we lost, heads went, errors started to come.
Mm.
And it just, you could feel it coming. Like, even when we were when we were 21-13 up, it went to about 24-21 or something. And US just had that, the flow momentum of the game, it was just completely with them. And whilst obviously it was a Matt Ferguson mistake that gave them the try, that was coming. It wasn't sort of out of the blue. What do you think about the idea that they will learn more from this game than if they'd won?
Depends who you're talking about. Do you think there's some people who will like never play again.
I don't think we've got the depth to be making that sort of statement.
Yeah, probably. I think there is probably something in that hard losses type thing, and it's just like when they go back and look at the videos, there's going to be really stupid things like knock-ons and penalties given away that they just didn't have to do.
Yeah.
But they were doing it because they were trying to force it because they were like, shit, we're either just ahead or we're behind and we're now chasing the game. So I do think for the younger lads, they're learning that in a decent environment. I still would have preferred the win. I still think, you know, getting a young group of players together and managing, if they'd scraped that win, that's still a better result than winning by losing 1 point. I still think the development points are all there.
Yeah.
You've not played well, but you've managed to find a way to win.
I think that's the thing about development, that when you look at the selection and you compare it to somewhere like New Zealand, you know, could have played, you know, an ITM 15 against USA and beat them. But they would never do that. They would play 12, 11 of their best players, starting players, and then gradually put in debutants or newish players.
Yeah.
And I just feel it's actually quite unfair on the new guys, like people like Matt Ferguson and George Horn, Adam Hastings, who, you know, in years to come are probably going to be the spine of that team, and just sort of chucking them in at the deep end. And, you know, sure, you sink or swim, but, you know, that doesn't normally work.
Yeah.
You're going to sink. So I think that, and then we're going to talk about it later, but the selection against Argentina as well, just there's far more questions there than we'd expect. And I think that, you know, I'm sure Townsend has a plan and has a rationale and everything, but it doesn't seem that clear to me.
Should we talk about selection for Saturday?
Yeah, I thought we were going to do a little quiz in between.
We're doing
two.
A quiz in the middle.
Let's do a wee quiz.
I actually do have a quiz for you.
Yeah, let's do it.
Go on then, do a little quiz, and then we'll get on to the preview of the Argentina game.
Okay. Kind of two questions, and then a kind of question that has sort of multiple answers. So, first question, what is the address of Murrayfield?
What?
Take a guess, mate. Half point if you get the street right.
Oh, my Lord.
The reason I know this is because I looked at the flood defense report.
Oh,
and Murrayfield put their address down. So
there quite
you go.
Close to my house.
I've got absolutely no idea.
The mini Murrayfield.
This is another question.
Yes.
Yep.
Included, because included in some of the reports that were given out, they gave an approximation of how many spectators mini Murrayfield will hold.
Mm-hmm.
Whoever's closest gets the point.
I think I know that. To the man or woman.
Under 20 World Cup's been going on.
Mm-hmm.
Back in 2015, Scotland had a pretty good under 20 side, and seven of them are in the squad that's playing in the summer internationals. And okay. That doesn't include Scott Cummings, who was also in that under 20 squad. Who are the seven players who were in the 2015? Scotland under 20 squad who are now in the full Scotland team?
Seven.
There is seven. And actually, to make it a little bit easier, I'll tell you, there is two backs and there is five forwards.
Two backs, five forwards. Okay.
Well, that's quite hard. Seven people.
Yeah, I know. Pretty good year.
That is a really good
year. Because they've also got Andrew Davidson, Ali Miller, Lewis Wynn, Rory Hutchison, Patrick Kelly, Robbie Nairn, Archie Russell, Ben Vellacott. Including
really
the seven who are currently in the squad.
I bet at the time they didn't do that well, though.
Yeah, I bet they did absolutely fine. Right. What is the address for Murrayfield?
It's Roseburn Terrace.
I mean, it's not far off.
Murrayfield Road.
It's 102A Roseburn Street.
Oh, okay. Can I get a half point for Roseburn?
No, you don't. In one of the planning documents, they gave an exact, it was approximately, but they gave an exact number of how many fans they thought they would have in Mini Murrayfield. What is that number?
7.7K.
I think it's 8,700.
It is 7,876.
Yeah, boy. I got it the wrong way round.
Well done, Matt. One point.
Damn it.
Right, you're seven. So we start with the backs. Hanny, I'm coming to you first. What back? 2015.
George Horn.
George Horn is correct. Dave?
Blair Kinghorn.
And Blair Kinghorn is the other back.
Yeah.
Do you both have them?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you have George Horn, Dave?
Don't lie to me. Yeah, I did. It is G Horn.
Right, forwards. Dave, what you got?
Matt Ferguson?
No, I think he was. I think he was literally.
Oh God, no, he's so young, isn't he?
At Xander Ferguson.
Xander Ferguson is correct. I got the wrong. That is one.
I also had Matt Ferguson. So Bradbury.
Bradbury is correct. Have you got anyone else, Dave?
Jamie Ritchie.
Jamie Ritchie is correct.
I had Ritchie as well.
Very happy about that.
Actually, three.
The forwards. Give us some clues.
I mean, one started.
What in? What at the weekend?
Oh, Carmichael.
Yeah, Lewis Carmichael.
Yeah.
And then we've got a prop.
Murray McCallum.
Ah, nice, mate.
Thanks, man.
Did Dave take that? No.
No.
I mean, I don't know if he's kind, but...
Yeah, so a little bit of a vintage year.
Yeah.
That's an unbelievable year.
Yeah.
I think they might have done... Was that not the year that they...
It was 2016.
England in the Six Nations as well.
They did okay, didn't they?
I remember Callum scoring a couple of tries. Anyway, well, should we move on to
very
Argentina?
Good, very, very good. Yes. So, the Scotland squad to play Argentina has been announced. I'm just going to get it up in front of me because it genuinely...
So, it's Dell.
You got it? Well, take us through.
I'm doing it off the top of my
head. It is Dell, McAnally, Bergen, Swinson and Gilchrist in the second row, and a back row of Magnus Bradbury at six, Fraser Brown at seven, David Denson at eight, and then a backline of George Horn and Adam Hastings, 9-10, centres Pete Horn and Nick Grigg, and a back three of Blair Kinghorn, Stuart Hogg, and Dougie Fife, with the bench George Turner, Jamie Batty, Xander Ferguson, Ben Toulis, Jamie Ritchie, Sam Hidalgo-Klein, James Lang, and Chris Harris. Lads, what the fuck is going on with Gregor Townsend's selections this tour?
I hate that team.
Do you hate it?
I hate that team. I hate...
Talk me through everything that you hate about it.
The front row is fine. I don't understand...
It's good to see Dell back.
Yeah, the front row is strong, actually. It's really strong. I don't see the point in playing Swinson. I don't see why he was playing six last week either. What's the point? We have good strength in the second row and flanker.
Do you think... That's Tooney saying that he thinks Swinson is a stronger option than Ben Toulis.
No way.
Or is it just, it is a rotation?
I think it's rotation. He's just giving him a shot, see what he can do.
I think it must be, particularly against Argentina, who are sort of famous scrummagers.
Yeah, physical. Surely
Toulis is heavier than Swinson.
Swinson looks like skinny these days. He seems to have lost weight.
I don't know, we're sacrificing a bit of weight in the back row. Clearly there's a bit of mobility, which I think is what Swinson does bring. But
And then staying with the pack, Denton... Probably the best eight option they've got. Happy to see Bradbury there. And I think it would have made sense to play Ritchie. And I don't understand why they're playing Fraser Brown at seven. I think surely you keep him purely as a hooker. Why shake things up? Why rock the boat in that manner?
I don't understand.
Unless it was a real problem position, which I don't think it is.
I don't see why we need to sort of prove that Fraser Brown has that versatility. We kind of know it. He's going to go to the World Cup, all things equal, as one of the three hookers with Rambo and George Turner.
And then you think about it, McAnally has played...
Could also play in the back row.
Back row, well, until quite recently.
McAnally has played much more professional rugby in the back row.
McAnally went to back row against New Zealand in the autumn.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Turner came on.
Yeah, it is just so strange because I get it. Fraser Brown can, if worst comes to worst, he's played flanker for Heriots. He can play in that position, but his skill level and what he brings to the table are not suited to an international back row.
And it's positioning. Agreed. And it's understanding of the game, which I'd be more worried about rather than his mobility or, yeah, you know, ability to win turnovers. He could do it.
He's the sort of player that if there's like a yellow card or an injury, you're just like, fine, you can chuck him in the back row. But what do we learn? I think my question on that pack is, he's talked an awful lot about this being a development tour. If that is a development tour, why are we playing Swinson in the second row? We kind of know what Swinson offers. And why the hell are we playing Fraser Brown in the back row?
I just think
it doesn't teach us anything.
Once again, it's unfair on guys like Horn and Hastings, who should be playing behind, I think, as strong a pack as possible, with a settled, particularly for Horn, with a settled back row helping you out in terms of managing the game. So, it could work.
Should we have a look further into that back line? Matt, you were telling us what you hate about this squad. What do you hate
the back line? I don't like the centres at all. I think it would have been a good match to give Lang another shot. I think he looked pretty good against Canada.
That's where I come back to my point of what is the point of this tour? We've seen a little bit of James Lang. Is that it? Is Townsend made up his mind that he's good enough or not good enough?
I don't understand it. And also, I think actually for this match, if you want to win it, I would have played Sam Dowd-Klein. I wouldn't have played George Horn.
Do you not think the Pete Horn case is we've got George Horn and Adam Hastings, two inexperienced players playing against Argentina?
I think he's babysitting.
Let's bring in a cool.
That's fair. But that's why I would have played Hidalgo-Klein.
Yeah, I get that.
And why not? You've already done Horn and Hastings. They play at Glasgow all the time. Why don't you try out Hidalgo-Klein and Hastings as another halfback combination?
I kind of feel that Horn and Hastings are going to be backup 9 and 10 for the World Cup.
Really?
It feels that that's probably what they're aiming towards.
That's pretty risky.
I think Hastings is 100%.
Yeah, no, I agree with that.
Backup 10.
I would have Hidalgo-Klein, I think, ahead of Horn as a more reliable option, personally.
Yeah. I mean, if you
don't need to go to World Cups with, like, risky game breakers. I just don't think you
Who's starting in your head, who's starting at 9 for Scotland in the World Cup? Laidlaw?
Yes. Oh, yes. Yes, sir, boy.
Nathan Foles.
Charlie Sheil.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, my point is, I'm pro. Broadly speaking, I am pro Horn and Hastings being given as much game time and exposure on this tour as possible. You know, that fits with the idea of this being a development tour. But do you think, I mean, one thing and a criticism that I've noticed is that Hastings was kind of hidden quite a lot against the USA. He wasn't always standing at first receiver. He was relieved of all kicking duties.
Yeah.
Like, do you think, I don't know what that does to the psyche of a player or something like that, but surely if he's 10, you want to get him developed to understand that he can deliver all of those things at that level.
But then it doesn't make sense. In a way, I don't actually mind saying, look, you just focus on controlling the game. You don't have to kick at goals. But at the same time, you're just chucking him in the deep end with this really rogue green team. I don't understand it. I think my only other complaint with the backs is Nick Grigg. I think we know as much as we need to know about Nick Grigg, that he is a good club player, but isn't going to be one of your starting 13s. And I would rather have seen Bennett playing there.
I would have rather seen Bennett getting a run out as well.
Because you know that Bennett at his best is a better player than Grigg.
Yeah, that's true.
Definitely.
I agree with that.
I think Grigg's limited.
Is Bennett a sort of a fairly like for like with Hugh Jones, Scotland's starting 13 though? Is he trying to cultivate a different type of outside centre?
But they're all kind of... I would say that Jones and Grigg are fairly similar in the way that they're kind of hard running. They're not distributors, I don't think.
Yeah.
Whereas I think Jones that Bennett is actually probably better at bringing others into the game. That's what I think. I mean, I know you don't think that, but that's what I think.
I actually don't think any of them are particularly good distributors. I actually think if you look at Jones, Grigg and Bennett are all great runners with the ball. They can all hit great lines and their defense is okay. I don't think any of them are confident at chucking a 20-meter pass under pressure.
I agree, but I would rather have Jones or Bennett doing it than Grigg. I think Grigg is more limited than the other two, personally. Yeah. I don't think Grigg brings others into the back line, and that's what I'm worried about at the Saturday when your two best players in the whole pitch, including Argentina, are probably Hogg and Kinghorn. And I just don't see them getting as involved as much as they should.
You would like to think that it's Pete Horn making those passes with Grigg holding the line.
Yeah.
Chucking in a set pass.
That is
what he does love doing, to be fair.
And the only point I was going to say on Fraser Brown is the only sort of rationale, and I don't think there is, but the only rationale I can see is that they're like, right, we've got Denton and Bradbury, and we just want them to be trucking up ball
all day long.
All day long. And essentially, it's like, to Fraser Brown, it's like all you're doing is tackling.
But that's what Jamie Ritchie could do.
I think, yes, but I think Jamie Ritchie is a little bit more lightweight than Fraser Brown.
Possibly.
And the Argentina back row is big.
And but then Ritchie's a lot taller.
Yeah. I agree, but in the tight, in defence, I think Fraser Brown's going to give you more than Jamie Ritchie.
Fraser Brown.
Possibly.
Fraser Brown and McAnally are both quite good at getting their heads over the ball. Is he trying to sort of add up to 1-7 with a couple of hookers? But even then, I just don't understand why he's doing that. He has a 7 on the bench.
Tombola, man. I didn't think he'd do the tombola at Scotland. So what do we think? What are our predictions?
I don't want to be negative.
I'm worried.
I haven't really seen much of Argentina, but I've heard they've been pretty poor against Wales.
They're really bad.
Their coach is getting sacked. How much are they going to give a fuck, you know, just before their summer holidays? I think maybe Scotland have got more to gain, I would say.
I get the sense that actually Argentina sacking their coach could be a good thing because he's lost so many games, they're probably fed up of him. No, and they'll just go, right, let's get our crack.
Around.
Let's play it the way we want to.
Yeah,
sounds
true.
Like Ledesma's going to be the one that gets the job. He's been doing a good job at the Jaguares. They just say, lads, let's play the way we have been. I think it's a bit of a negative.
Go on then. So what's your prediction?
Argentina win by 7.
Alan?
I think Argentina will win by 10.
Oof. Okay, our friends at Rugby Forecast on Twitter, who've got some sort of bot that looks at the last 4 years of results from both teams and chucks it into a Russian sex bot rugby machine and comes out with a result, are predicting a Scotland win by 2. So I'm going to go with the Russian sex bot over at Rugby Forecast. I'm going to say a narrow victory Scotland.
Fair play.
And how about this? Dent Wheezy's first ever Scotland try.
Is Dent Wheezy never scored a Scotland try?
He's never scored a Scotland try.
He's famously never scored a Scotland try.
Yeah. Dent Wheezy.
Dent Wheeze is going to come in with the winner on Saturday.
He's going to be straight through the winner, and I'm going to take him out before he can score.
Place your bets now. You heard it here first. Right, thanks a lot, guys. We will be back next week to chew through whatever happens down in Argentina and also look ahead to next season. I suppose it's going to be our last pod before the summer break. Thanks a lot for joining us. Please let us know what you think on iTunes, 5 stars, and give us reviews and hit subscribe. On Twitter, keep chatting to us at @ThistleRugbyPod. Instagram, @Thistle_Rugby_Pod if you love rugby, niche Scottish rugby memes. And then please let us know what you're thinking on email, thethistlerugby@gmail.com. Thank you very much. I'm out of here.
Cheers, guys.
See ya.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to Quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.